From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 19th day of July, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will join us to take a look at the cash grain market, what's been happening down on the farm there in Shelby County, Illinois. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Mike Tenura will be here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And we'll do it all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
How you doing, Todd?
Oh, I'm really, really well. Back from my trip out west. Enjoyed the Tetons and talking with the Idaho barley farmers and meeting and greeting with some of the folks that brew beer for Anheuser-Busch and the procurement. It was just a lot of fun. I would urge anybody, if they get the opportunity to go out west, to drive it, or at least to drive a large portion of it, because the topography is magnificent and it changes every few hours. So it's a lot of fun to drive across that part of the world. Glad to be back and be here and ready to talk with you a little bit about what's been happening over the last week. What's your assessment of the marketplace at this time?
Well, finally, the market did find at least a short-term bottom, and maybe it's more of a longer-term bottom. At least I'm hopeful it is. I think the market got terribly carried away on the bearish side, due to favorable crop rating conditions, generally non-threatening weather for at least 90% of the growing region. And then I think USDA supply-demand tables that was released last Thursday maybe put the worst-case scenario, at least on the demand side, for soybeans. I'm not too sure about corn. I do know corn world-ending stocks are declining in supply, so I'm hopeful their balance sheet demand projections kind of hold up for corn in the August report. The export sales pace is on par to beat USDA's new number, but we're running behind on the actual inspections going out of the country, and I think we're down to like 7 weeks here or so, and that we may not necessarily meet USDA's corn export number by September 1st. But whatever, they're sold, so they're going to probably be rolled into next year. But that kind of opens the door maybe for some larger carryouts. But that'll depend solely on the September 1st stocks report. Beans, I thought they were a little fluffy when they put them out in May. And now I think maybe they're too pessimistic. And I think they're too pessimistic on China using substitute or alternate protein sources. I think that looks a little lofty to me. So I think maybe the worst of the soybean balance sheets behind us, provided USDA doesn't find extra bushels, I guess, on the August report. And that's the same way with corn. USDA is going to do what they do, and we're going to have to live with it until we get further down the road and maybe get a little tighter yield projection maybe in the September. But the way this crop has advanced, I'm looking for the main growing region in the Corn Belt to be at full throttle Labor Day. There might not be very many people at the Farm Progress Show this year. They may be harvesting. I don't know. But it is really accelerated. And technically, I'm fairly optimistic that we can do some decent recoveries in here, because we do have a lot of divergences on the technical indicators that I kind of watch. And it does open up the door for at least to give this market a shot at a 50% retracement. And a 50% retracement on these corn would be right at 390. Now I'll go 390 plus or minus a nickel. 50% retracements have a tendency to be a hard spot, either going up or going down in the market. And then, you know, it needs another boost if it wants to do more than a 50% retracement. So I guess for now, we're right on the verge. Today's highs are right on the verge of kicking in some buy signals. So if we could maybe keep this momentum going and finish out Friday higher, that would kick in some buy signals in both corn and soybeans. And it would likely push soybeans above the first retracement area of around 23% of this 369 area. Now on soybeans, same thing. We've got a lot of divergences when you look at the technical indicators, and it does imply that beans at least have a shot, maybe going back 38%. And a 38% retracement would take them back to the 915 area, give or take a nickel. If we could get a little further boost, if we could maybe get some resolution to increase trade, foreign trade, maybe we could kick this thing all the way up into the 62% retracement area, which would take us up to about like 971 level. Now, I think what you're seeing, I've been on the phone with some of my old contacts, and they're stationed at different locations around the world. And you can be assured that China's going to buy beans, and they may end up coming in as beans coming from Brazil or Argentina, but they're actually U.S. beans. I mean, it doesn't take much to change the paperwork. All you do is run stuff into Singapore, do some documentation changes, and zoom it back out, and you don't know where those beans came from. Maybe they came from Canada. Maybe they came from Brazil. Maybe they came from Argentina. So I do think demand is going to be I don't think we're going to get hurt that bad, even if these tariffs do stay in place. The other thing is that we are in a world market, so if China's buying all the beans out of China, then that's going to push the rest of the customers into the United States. I think we started seeing some of that today. We had some bean sales to unknown destinations, and some of those unknown destinations may go get their documentation changed someplace in the world, and they'll end up in China. And, you know, the other thing you got to keep in mind, China does have a grain company called COFCO, and COFCO has a lot of grain origination agreements with a lot of these regional cooperatives throughout the Midwest. And I think this might be a play that COFCO kind of steals some of the China soybean demand from the other major players. As the ABCs that we kind of know as the ABCs and maybe the lowercase ABCs. I'm still hopeful and optimistic that in the long run, soybeans are going to recover. The question is we got more acres now based upon USDA's June 30th report, and then we've got, you know, fairly high crop rating levels. We'll just have to see what kind of yield we have on them. But We're still carrying over a large inventory of soybeans from the 17 crop, and if we have another big crop here in 18, our biggest problem, as it usually is in agriculture, is we overproduce. The thing of it is I think this is the consequences of the high prices that we saw in the double O's up to the 2012 area. It increased world production, world acres all over. So we increased competition, and now we're kind of on the downside of that. We'll have to see how she plays out. Like I said, I've said it for a long time. This everything seems like it's come a month early. I wouldn't be surprised if we could be making our seasonal lows here during July when we normally make seasonal highs. And it doesn't mean we're going to go straight up, but we could begin to trace out some kind of sideways to higher trend as we go on into the harvest area, harvest time.
Hey, thanks so much. You know, that means that October is the November-December recovery, and crop insurance doesn't pay. Just thinking ahead.
You're all going to come to my opinion at some point in time that crop insurance is a bad deal for farmers. So I'll stick with that. I already get enough hate mail on that one, hate deals on that one. But everybody's going to find out that's not – insurance is insurance, and it's not meant to pay.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you in another week.
Okay, Todd. Bye.
That's Den Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, Chinese officials are not happy that a White House official has been blaming Chinese President Xi Jinping for blocking progress on a deal to avert a trade war and call that shocking and bogus. U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened further tariffs unless Beijing agrees to change its intellectual property practices and high technology industry subsidy plans. On Wednesday, Larry Kudlow, who heads the White House Economic Council, said that he believed lower-ranking Chinese officials want a deal, including Xi's senior economic advisor, Li He, but that Xi has refused to make changes to Chinese technology transfer and other trade policies. Asked about Kudlow's comments, China's foreign ministry spokesperson, Hua Xinyong, said that the relevant United States official unexpectedly distorted the facts and made bogus accusations is shocking and beyond imagination. For his part, Larry Kudlow on Wednesday said that Xi is the one holding the game up. China could end U.S. tariffs this afternoon, he says, by providing a more satisfactory approach and taking steps that other countries are also calling for. China's other trading partners, including the European Union, while not supporting tariffs, have also criticized Beijing's trade policies. Well, let's stay with trade. The American Farm Bureau and other ag leaders warn Congress and the administration the growing trade war will bankrupt farming operations if it continues much longer. Fear was on full display at a House Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee hearing. American Farm Bureau Federation Vice President and head of the South Dakota Farm Bureau, Scott Vanderwall, made these comments.
Multiple rounds of U.S. tariff announcements and subsequent retaliatory tariffs by China have now led to large cumulative tariffs that would completely price U.S. ag products out of foreign markets.
Which, he says, adds to a perfect storm of lower income, lack of labor, and possibly no farm bill.
Patience among farmers is running out as we get closer to the main selling season. As of yesterday, since the end of May, new crop soybean futures have dropped about $2 a bushel, or 20%, and corn has dropped about 65 cents a bushel.
Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp joined Vanderwall in urging negotiations and not tariffs.
We cannot afford to lose our place at the table as a leader in the global marketplace. We need to be at the table. If we're not at the table, we will be on the menu.
And here's what Russell Benning, AFBF Trade Advisory Committee member and Texas Farm Bureau president, had to say.
Placing tariffs on our closest trading partners, particularly Canada and Mexico, is concerning. Texas Farm Bureau believes that we must continue working toward a strong, modernized North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yet Benning and others gave President Trump credit for going after China, which exceeded its WTO minimum support price for corn, rice, and wheat by nearly $100 million.
China's illegal subsidies for those three crops in 1 year exceeded what we will spend on the entire farm safety net for every crop on every acre for the entire life of the Farm Bill.
But absent a successful outcome by President Trump, Benning warned, our farmers will suffer. AFBF's Vanderwall opined farmers and ranchers are the most patriotic people in the world, but going bankrupt should not be a consequence of that dedication. Let's switch gears now from trade to biofuels. The National Biodiesel Board says the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, should set the 2020 biomass-based diesel obligation at 2.8 billion gallons and appropriately account for small refinery exemptions. Testifying to the EPA during a public hearing on the Renewable Fuel Standard Wednesday, NBB and its members asked the EPA to make the change based on the agency's own analysis in the proposed rule showing that the volume is achievable next year. NBB also told the EPA it must reduce the uncertainty it has caused by issuing retroactive small refiner hardship exemptions. The action, according to the NBB executives, is needed to provide the certainty that the biodiesel industry needs. EPA has estimated that a small refinery hardship exemption it retroactively granted to refiners reduced the 2016 and 2017 RVOs by a combined 2.25 billion gallons, and the National Biodiesel Board estimates the 16 and 17 exemptions reduced demand for biodiesel by more than 300 million gallons. And finally today, Renewable Fuels Association President Bob Dineen will transition into an advisory role later this year. Serving as CEO since 2001, Dineen has been with the organization for more than 30 years and will become RFA's Senior Strategic Advisor in October. Executive Vice President Jeff Cooper will assume the position of President and CEO of the RFA. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention to the cash side of the market. We're now joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. Take it, you are there in Shelby County on the farm today.
Yes, absolutely. Just looked at some corn actually this morning, so everything looks really good in our part of the world. A little bit dry in parts of where we farm because we didn't get any rain last weekend. Other parts that we farm got 2.5 inches, so it's going to be interesting to see if we catch any rain this weekend.
I was in Logan County on my farm last night there near Lincoln, and the soybeans there looked awfully good as well. So the crops, I think that's pretty par for the course across the whole of the Corn Belt, with the exception of parts of Missouri and a little bit of southern Iowa, are in awfully good shape. And we've had a pretty decent market this week. Not bad, given what we've seen in the last couple, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, like I was saying before, you know, you hate to even bring it up, but we've settled higher every day this week so far. And so it's certainly nice to see. It's not like we're on a big tear of a rally, but it certainly beats what we experienced last week. So at this stage of the game, a lot of producers are wondering about new crop sales. Should we be looking at them? And I've been telling guys, it's more important than ever. Get out in your field, take an agronomist if you need to, and get a little bit better handle on what kind of production you're looking at. Because, these lower prices, you can still make some money in a lot of situations, depending on what kind of yield you're assuming.
I take it you said you were out in the cornfield this morning, so Nick went well, and you can see that pollination was good.
Yes, I didn't find any pollination misses. Saw a little bit of tip back here and there. For the most part, the kind of populations we're planting, I wasn't too concerned with it, especially with the kind of ear size we saw overall and ear weight. You know, definitely a lot of mass to most of those ears. Feel pretty confident that we're going to have pretty good yields here.
And if you had not made enough sales at this point, would you add some on?
Right now, the only way I would do so personally is if I knew that I had cash needs this fall that weren't going to be met by my current sales. I still feel like corn especially is in a situation that it should have some support. I do not think we've got a 180 national yield. And with the usage that we're looking at, I have to think that a guy may have a little bit of a better opportunity on down the road.
Hey, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks so much, and glad you're here in the home state.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the closing market report for a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Can you take me through the next 10 days or so here in the Corn Belt, and then maybe we'll look further out into the month of August after that?
Well, we're going to see a little bit of rainfall over the next few days. There's a large upper-level system that's located near Minnesota today, and that's going to traverse to the east over the next several days. Eventually, it will reach Indiana and Ohio by Sunday, and at that point, everything will start to break down as that system weakens. But all of that said, we're looking for anywhere from a half inch of rain to 1.5 inches of rain across much of the eastern Corn Belt over the next several days. That will improve soil moisture a little bit in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, but we're still going to need more rain after that because it has been pretty dry for a while.
And then further into the month of August, because once we get out, we'll be looking, I think, at some cool weather through about the end of the month. And I don't know whether things change or not in early August.
Well, that's exactly right. It is going to stay cool for a while. The warm pattern that began around May 1st is ending, and we're going to see cool temperatures here for about 10 to 14 days. So we'll see highs in the 70s and 80s with lows in the 50s and 60s for the rest of the month. In general, that's pretty good news for corn and soybean production because that will reduce some of the stress that we've seen from these warmer temperatures over the last several weeks. But the big uncertainty gets out into August. August is still about 2 weeks away, so kind of on the very edge of the forecastable weather horizon. So it's hard to have a lot of confidence in what might happen at that point in time. But we do know two things. One of the things we know is that May and June was the second warmest of the last 124 years across the Corn Belt. And we also know that June was number 16 wettest. So those are two unusual features. And what we were able to do is look at some of those years in the past that were similarly warm in that May-June period and similarly wet in the June period, and then try to figure out how did those growing seasons close out in August. Well, after we took a look at everything, the only thing that sticks out is that it was unusual to have August end up being cooler than normal. And what that tells us is that it's more than likely for August to be near or warmer than normal, which tells us that the cool period that we have over the next 10 to 14 days is most probable to break sometime in early August, at which point we would end up being close to normal or warmer than normal going forward. Again, this is just a probability. If you just look at the weather maps, it's hard to say because once you look that far into the future, you can't forecast the weather specifically. But from a probability standpoint, we think that things will start to warm up once we get about 2-3 weeks into the future.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. Talk to you next week.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, Commodity Week will come up this evening on our website at willag.org, hopefully by about 6 o'clock tonight. Our panelists this evening will include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Thanks for being with us here on the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.